Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. It's great to be with you today. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we've been going through some stories, some issues, some topics that are important to me and I believe to the world. And I'd like to just actually try to continue along the vein of looking at the question of how we participate in society, how we contribute either to on the side of improving it, on the side of justice, on the side of freedom, on the side of truth, or on the side of dragging it down, on the side of participating in lies, collaborating in oppression, or merely being a spectator, which is probably the most common form of collaboration that we have. Now, I have on the line Doug from Texas. Doug, welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Well, what's on my mind is I live in Austin, and well, I actually live in Bastrop, which is about, you know, 5 miles from Austin, but
sure.
I work, and I see constantly the bombardment of skies with the chemtrails.
Okay.
I know these are funny, and I've watched a little plane that was going along, putting that big chemtrail looked like a little silver beepy. And I watched it, and it flew along there, putting out this big chemtrail. And then all of a sudden, it just shut off. It's like turned your car off. But the plane didn't crash. It kept on flying.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, you know, that's very intentionally. You know, and I'm sure it's so important. And the government knows so much better than we do what's good for us. I've engaged in the illegal activity of buying raw milk.
Okay.
And with like 30 people.
Yeah, yeah.
To get raw milk. And I've discussed it with several people that, you know, actually live out by the Highland Lakes, which supply Austin with their water. The clouds always form above these lakes, and then a huge thundercloud forms, and then they'll fly by there, spray their stuff, and it will dissipate, and no rain will actually happen. So that's why we're in severe drought, because our criminal government is doing that. I think it's part of Agenda 21 or whatever. If we force everybody to move into a shoebox or whatever. I mean, that's my very humble opinion.
Now, Doug, I've no doubt that there is cases of deliberate spraying that do occur at different levels, at different altitudes, for a variety of reasons. I've actually done quite a few shows on this question about chemtrails specifically. One of the problems I have with it in terms of sort of, I guess, I'm rather critical of some of the people and some of the claims out there about the spraying, because in many cases it is indistinguishable from what would actually be a normal aircraft contrail. There is actually some misunderstanding about that in the community, I've found. But, I mean, I'm just interested to know, in the particular case that you're describing there, do you have any idea what the altitude of the aircraft was?
No, but it looks, I'm watching it. I'm so absorbed in it. I'm sitting there watching it and saying, isn't that special? This plane is flying at probably about 30,000 feet.
Sure.
And it's going along, and it's like it just, same little silver BB in the sky that I'm watching, it just shuts it off immediately.
Yeah.
Like it, you know, hey, I didn't notice it was going down, descending, or ascending, or doing anything. It's just like we cut off the valve. There's no more stuff coming out of here.
Absolutely.
That's what I think. I mean, and would you put anything past government?
Well, certainly, I will certainly not put anything past them, and I think that it's quite legitimate to have any questions and to pose those questions and to do things to advance our understanding. Now, one thing I'd like to know, Doug, I mean, what do you think about the problem where we tend to be a bit of a spectator society? We tend to be just incapable of actually taking action. I mean, there are many, many issues, and I've been through this many years looking at things, and I've found myself not doing anything about it. I mean, have you got any ideas about what we can actually do to break through the barrier that stops us from actually taking some action? Even in this case, as you say, you saw a plane and you think something might be going on. I mean, what can you suggest as a legitimate sequence of steps that we can do to address this problem?
Well, I tell you what, Harewood, you're doing your part to address it. I'm doing my part to address it, and I encourage all other people to do it. In other words, you are making a very active effort to get out there and spread the truth.
Yeah.
I am too, and I live on the talk radio, and I disseminate all the good information that I have.
Yeah.
That's about all you can do, isn't it? I mean, what else can you do?
Well, yeah, I think communication is really important. I think it's often underrated. Even the willingness to call in and say something on the radio, I mean, that is incredibly powerful. I think what is a problem is when many people just don't really want to do anything at all. I think there's a little bit of fear involved in that. There's a little bit of fear involved in actually, you know, people think, oh, if I speak out, I might have a problem. I mean, I've had people sort of tell me that they're afraid to say anything on the radio because they think that the government's watching, or, you know, the ASIO, which is our equivalent of the CIA over here, or, you know, just any they think anything that they do to dissent against the powers that be will somehow be a black mark against them. And, I mean, it's ridiculous, isn't it?
There's a lot of fear. A lot of fear. There's a lot of people cowering in their closets and, you know, listening to us. And we go out there and say, hey, this is what's going on. And there are a lot of people cowering that, you know, the Patriot is a, you know, scorn, whatever, you know the quote.
Indeed, yeah.
Right. You know what I'm talking about.
Absolutely.
We'll join in the parade when the parade gets big enough that we're not scared to. I've known Alex Jones since he was 19 years old. A guy is solid gold. He's true blue, whatever. Anything you say about him, he's. And I thank God people like him and you and you know, that's what it takes. It's not everybody's got enough guts to do what's right, but a certain percentage do. You know, George Washington was in a big minority when he won the freedom in America, and this, that, and another. I suppose the biggest criminal gang in the world defeated him. So,
absolutely. Well, thanks so much for that, Doug. And anything else you wanted to add to that?
That's about it.
Well, have a great day. It's been really nice talking to you. Thanks.
All right. Talk to you later.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we are live with Truth News Radio Australia, and we are available for your conversation, for your input on any of the topics that I'm covering today, or indeed pretty much anything. I'm very open to hearing what you think. Now, I'd like to return to the subject there of Hugo Chavez, because I have heard on some of the radio networks in the US, and I won't mention any by name, but I know that there is a view that Chavez was this socialist guy and socialism is bad and therefore he must have been bad. And as I was saying before in the previous hour, I don't subscribe to any of the major political systems. I'm politically atheist. I can see some good things in socialistic type setups. I can see a lot of good things in a free market system. But I don't see any representatives of any political system doing a very good job, because what I see is going on is there are corporatist oligarchies that will lie, will deceive, will misrepresent anything simply to maintain their power. And guess what? They use puppet figures as leaders on both sides of politics, left and right, to control people. And they can control people through the left wing, they control people through the right wing. But every now and then, one of them gets through who won't be controlled. And this is what I believe Hugo Chavez was a man who wouldn't be controlled. I'm not saying he was perfect, but he was not one of their appointees. He was not one of their men. And he had a lot of people that he did support, that supported him, and around South America and around the world. And he is a legitimate hero. And I'm going to read to you from the article here by Paul Craig Roberts. Hugo Chavez, President of Venezuela and world leader against imperialism, has died. Washington imperialists and their media and think tank whores expressed a gleeful sigh of relief, as did the brainwashed U.S. population. An enemy of America was gone. Chavez was not an enemy of America. He was an enemy of Washington's hegemony over other countries, an enemy of Washington's alliance with elite ruling cliques who steal from the people they grind down and deny sustenance. He was an enemy of Washington's injustice, of Washington's foreign policy based on lies and military aggression, bombs and invasions. Washington is not America. Washington is Satan's hometown. Chavez was a friend of truth and justice, and this made him unpopular throughout the Western world, where every political leader regards truth and justice as dire threats. Now, we are just going to break. I will continue reading from this article, excellent article by Paul Craig Roberts on Hugo Chavez. And you're listening to Truth News Radio Australia. It's great to have your company today. Don't go away. We'll be right back after these short messages. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, going beyond the spin, deception and propaganda of mainstream news. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe now. Welcome back, you with Truth News Radio. It's great to be talking to you today. And I'm going to continue now reading from an article here written by Paul Craig Roberts about Hugo Chavez. Chavez was a world leader. Unlike US politicians, Chavez was respected throughout the non-Western world. He was awarded honorary doctorates from China, Russia, Brazil, and other countries, but not from Harvard, Yale, Cambridge, and Oxford. Chavez was a miracle. He was a miracle because he did not sell out to the United States and the Venezuelan elites. Had he sold out, Chavez would have become very rich from oil revenues, like the Saudi royal family, and he would have been honored by the United States in the way that Washington honors all its puppets, with visits to the White House. He could have become a dictator for life as long as he served Washington. Each of Washington's puppets, from Asia to Europe and the Middle East, anxiously awaits the invitation that demonstrates Washington's appreciation of his or her servitude to the global imperialist power that still occupies Japan and Germany 68 years after World War II, and South Korea 60 years after the end of the Korean War, and has placed troops and military bases in a large number of other so-called sovereign countries. It would have been politically easy for Chavez to sell out. All he had to do was to continue populist rhetoric, promote his allies in the army, throw more benefits to the underclass than its members had ever previously experienced, and divide the rest of the oil revenues with the corrupt Venezuelan elites. But Chavez was a real person. Like Rafael Correa, the three-term elected president of Ecuador, who stood up to the United States and granted political asylum to the persecuted Julian Assange, and Evo Morales, the first indigenous president of Bolivia since the Spanish conquest. The majority of Venezuelans understood that Chavez was a real person. They elected him to four terms as president and would have continued electing him as long as he lived. What Washington hates most is a real person who cannot be bought. And I think this is so important to understand, is that when we're looking at world politics and we're looking at the situations that develop, that we do have to look at individuals. We have to look at the way people behave in a given situation. Ironically, the media always focuses on personalities, but they focus on personalities in such a way that we don't see the real person. We see like a projection of the personality that the media wants to give us. Like they project the personality to us. But guess what? You know, people actually do have personalities. They are real, and they can be individual, and they can be different to what is expected. They can break the mold. And I do believe that Chavez was someone who did this. Happens every now and then. I think John F. Kennedy broke the mold as well. I think he was a big problem for the powers that be, and that's why he had to be eliminated. So let me just continue now from the article. The more the corrupt Western politicians and media whores demonized Chavez, the more Venezuelans loved him. They understood completely that anyone damned by Washington was God's gift to the world. It is costly to stand up to Washington. All who are bold enough to do so are demonized. They risk assassination and being overthrown in a CIA-organized coup, as Chavez was in 2002. When CIA-instructed Venezuelan elites sprung their coup and kidnapped Chavez, the coup was overthrown by the Venezuelan people, who took to the streets, and by elements of the military before Chavez could be murdered by the CIA-controlled Venezuelan elites, who escaped with their own venal lives only because, unlike them, Chavez was humanitarian. The Venezuelan people rose in instantaneous and massive public defense of Chavez and put the lie to the Bush White House claim that Chavez was a dictator. And I would like to draw your attention to a great film that was made by Australian investigative journalist John Pilger a few years ago, in which he went into a lot of detail about what took place in Venezuela at that time. I just can't remember off the top of my head the name of the film, but if you Google John Pilger and get the list of documentaries that he has made up, you'll certainly find that film. And I do believe there's a more recent film called The Revolution Will Not Be Televised, which contains more important information about Venezuela and Chavez. The attempted coup against Chavez had such similarities to the successful coup against the Iranian elected government back in, I believe, 1953, that it was clearly from the same playbook. The idea of engineering toppling a regime by empowering forces within it and elites who have money. It's just a tactic. It's just one of the standard tactics that the CIA uses. And, of course, they tried and failed in the case of Chavez. So just continuing here from the story by Paul Craig Roberts. Showing its sordid corruption, the New York Times took the side of the undemocratic coup by a handful of elitists against the democratically elected Chavez, and declared that Chavez's removal by a small group of rich elites and CIA operatives meant that Venezuelan democracy is no longer threatened by a would-be dictator. Incredible. The lies and demonization continue with Chavez's death. He will never be forgiven for standing up for justice. Neither will Correa and Morales, both of whom are no doubt on assassination lists. Counterpunch and other commentators have collected examples of the venom-spewing obituaries that the Western prostitutes have written for Chavez, essentially celebrations that death has silenced the bravest voice on earth. And there's some links here in the article. I might try and open one of those. Perhaps the most absurd of all was Associated Press business reporter Pamela Sampson's judgment that Chavez wasted Venezuela's oil wealth on social programs, including state-run food markets, cash benefits for small families, free health clinics and education programs. A poor use of money that could have been used to build skyscrapers, such as the world's tallest building in Dubai, and branches of the Louvre and Guggenheim museums in Abu Dhabi. And just continuing here from the article by Paul K. Roberts. Among the tens of millions of Washington's victims in the world, the people of Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya, Sudan, Pakistan, Yemen, Somalia, Syria, Palestine, Lebanon, Mali, Iran, Russia, China, and South America, waiting in the wings for sanctions, destabilization, conquest, or reconquest. Chavez's September 20, 2000 speech at the UN General Assembly during George W. Bush's regime will stand forever as the greatest speech of the early 20th century. That's quite a strong accolade there from Paul Craig Roberts. And we've got some quotes here now that he provides from that speech. Chavez beards the lion in his own den. And we are about to go to break, but I'll just briefly read to you from some of these quotes from Chavez, and we'll have more after the break. We should call a psychiatrist to analyze yesterday's statement made by the President of the United States. As a spokesman for imperialism, he came to share his nostrums to try to preserve his current pattern of domination, exploitation, and pillage of the people of the world. An Alfred Hitchcock movie could use it as a scenario. I would even propose a title, The Devil's Recipe. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. We're just going to break. We'll be right back. Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. Well, it's great to have your company today. And if you would like to join the show, you are most welcome. You can call us from anywhere in Australia on 1-300-153-372. And you can call us from the US on 512-646-1984. And if you've got any views about Hugo Chavez, I'd be very interested to know what you think. I'm reading a very powerful and strong accolade for Hugo Chavez written by Paul Craig Roberts here. And I think it's important. I think it's a really, really beautifully written piece, as are all of his articles. It's important to think about this. Because, see, world leaders that challenge the oligarchy, that challenge the powers that be, are rare. Now, often, the ones that do are not even that great people. I mean, Saddam Hussein. Obviously challenged America, but you know he wasn't. No one's saying he was a great man. I do think he was probably demonized more than was realistic. But he, you know, he was a classic dictator. He did have his enemies killed. He had all that kind of ruthlessness that goes with being a dictator. Gaddafi. I don't know. To be honest, I don't know the extent to which he was a ruthless dictator. I know he did do a lot of actually positive things for his people, but he did seize power in a military coup. So, and for many years, he played along with the powers that be. And this is what we often find with the pattern of control, the pattern of empire and the puppet dictators, is that, well, you do need a strong man to manage your country, to manage your dominion, your possession that you want to control. And strong men can be individualistic and can be dangerous. And so typically what they do is they support a dictator, they puff that person up, they give that person the assistance and the support. And then at a certain point, when that person becomes too cheeky, when it becomes more of a problem, they get rid of them. And we've seen this over and over again. It's just a very monotonous pattern that we've seen over and over again with American imperialism. However, with Chavez, they couldn't do that. See, they wanted to overthrow him. But he wasn't bad enough. This is the problem. You see, when someone is bad, right, you can actually overthrow them relatively easily because there will be all these enemies. Now, he had some enemies, but he didn't have enough enemies, and he had huge support from the grassroots of the population. So in that 2002 attempted coup, the people came, and they massed around his presidential palace, and they protected him. They actually literally physically protected him from probably being assassinated. Now, I was just reading to you there before a quote there from Hugo Chavez's speech to the UN General Assembly and Paul Craig Roberts' commentary on that. The UN General Assembly had never heard such words, not even in the days when the militarily powerful Soviet Union was present. Faces broke out in smiles of approval, but no one dared to clap. Too much US money for the home country was at stake. The US and UK delegations fled the scene like vampires confronted with garlic and the cross or werewolves confronted with silver bullets. Chavez spoke about the false democracy of elites that is imposed by force and on others by weapons and bombs. Chavez asked, "What type of democracy do you impose with marines and bombs?" "Wherever George W. Bush looks," Chavez said, "he sees extremists. And you, my brother," he looks at your color and he says, "there's an extremist." Evo Morales, the president of Bolivia, looks like an extremist. The imperialists see extremists everywhere. It is not that we are extremists. It is that the world is waking up. It is waking up all over, and people are standing up. In two short sentences, totaling 20 words, Chavez defined for all times the early 20th century Washington. The Imperium is afraid of truth. It is afraid of independent voices. It calls us extremists, but they are the extremists. Throughout South America and the non-Western world, Chavez's death is being blamed on Washington. South Americans are aware of the US congressional hearings in the 1970s when the Church Committee brought to light the various CIA schemes to poison Fidel Castro. The official document presented to President John F. Kennedy by the US Joint Chiefs of Staff, known as the Northwoods Project, is known to the world and is available online. The Northwoods Project consisted of a false flag attack on American citizens in order to blame Cuba and create public and world acceptance for U.S.-imposed regime change in Cuba. President Kennedy rejected the proposal as inconsistent with morality and accountable government. The belief has already been hardened in South America that Washington, with its hideous technologies of death, infected Chavez with cancer in order to remove him as an obstacle to Washington's hegemony over South America. This belief will never die. Chavez, the greatest South American since Simon Bolivar, was murdered by Washington. True or false, the belief is set in stone. As Washington and globalism destroy more countries, the lives of elites become more precarious. President Franklin Delano Roosevelt understood that security for the rich required economic security for the underclasses. Roosevelt enabled in the US a weak form of social democracy that European politicians had already understood was necessary for social cohesion and political and economic stability. The Clinton, Bush, and Obama regimes set about undermining the stability that Roosevelt provided, as Thatcher, Major, Blair, and the current Prime Minister of the UK undermined the social agreement between classes in the UK. Politicians in Canada, Australia, and New Zealand also made the mistake of handing power over to private elites at the expense of social and economic stability. Gerald Celente predicts that the elites will not survive the hatred and anger that they are bringing upon themselves. I suspect that he is correct. The American middle class is being destroyed, the working class has become a proletariat, and the social welfare system is being destroyed in order to reduce the budget deficit caused by the loss of tax revenues to jobs offshoring and the expenses of wars, overseas military bases, and financial bailouts. The American people are being compelled to suffer in order that elites can continue with their agendas. The US elites know what is coming. That is why they created a Nazi-style Ministry of the Interior known as Homeland Security, armed with enough ammunition to kill every American five times over and with tanks to neutralize the Second Amendment rights of Americans. Pistols and rifles are useless against tanks, as the British Branch Davidians found in Waco, Texas. The protection of a small handful of elites from the Americans that they are oppressing is also the reason the police are being militarized. Brought under Washington's control and armed with drones that can assassinate the real leaders of the American people. With Truth News Radio Australia, I've been reading to you here from Paul Craig Roberts, a great little article. I'll link to it from the site. We'll be right back after the break for one more segment. Do stay with us. Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. It's great to be with you today. And I would like to continue with a few more stories that are on our feeds here to cover before we finish the show off today. There's some 9/11 news. I've got a story here from 911blogger.com. And this was also posted on Information Clearinghouse. Historic case will challenge BBC's 9/11 coverage. And it says here, on February 25 in the small town of Horsham in the United Kingdom, there will be a rare and potentially groundbreaking opportunity for the 9/11 truth movement. 3 hours of detailed 9/11 evidence is to be presented and considered in a court of law where the British Broadcasting Corporation will be challenged over the inaccurate and biased manner in which it has portrayed the events and evidence of 9/11. Over the last 16 months, BBC has been challenged strongly by individuals in the UK over two documentaries that they showed in September 2011 as part of the 10th anniversary of 9/11, namely the 9/11 Conspiracy Road Trip and the 9/11 Conspiracy Files 10 years on. Formal complaints were lodged with the BBC over the inaccuracy and bias of these documentaries, which, according to 9/11 activists, was in breach of the operating requirements of the BBC through their Royal Charter and agreement with the British public. Now, I can vouch for that because I watched the Conspiracy Files Road Trip movie, and it was, honestly, probably the most ludicrous thing I've ever seen. I mean, it's hard to know whether you call it a... It was almost a joke. It was like a reality TV comedy. But unfortunately, it was actually serious. I mean, they took these kids from the UK, and they had to be young. That was part of the criteria. They had to be young. They had to be self-described 9/11 truthers, and they gave them an all-expenses-paid trip to New York and Washington and Pennsylvania to look firsthand at the evidence for 9/11 and to speak to experts who could tell them the facts and basically dissuade them from their conspiratorial views. I mean, this was the agenda of the show. The agenda of the show was that these kids had to be re-brainwashed. It was that obvious. It was that in your face. The leader of the group was, I believe, an Irish comedian. And he was clearly on the side of the official story of 9/11. And at least 80% of all the people who were featured in, apart from the kids themselves, were on the side of the official story. They had a couple of cameo appearances from 9/11 truth activists or representatives, but it was overwhelmed by this official story narrative. And yet, the way they did it, the way they presented the evidence, was just so unconvincing. It was so thin. It was so facile. And the way they ignored the most important questions was so obvious that, indeed, this program, the Conspiracy Road Trip, was a crude piece of propaganda. Emphasis on crude. It really, really was bad. So, anyway, just returning to the article here from 911 Blogger. So, a complaint was lodged with the BBC, saying that they were in breach of their operating requirements. Now, this document requires the BBC to show information that is both accurate and impartial. That's the charter, sorry. The Royal Charter and Agreement with the British Public is a document which requires the BBC to show information that is both accurate and impartial. Now, the complaints were supported by US-based educational charity Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, which submitted detailed scientific evidence to the BBC to buttress the complaints. The evidence focuses in particular on the confirmed freefall of WTC Building 7 and NIST's 2008 admission of this fact. In addition, over 300 AE911 Truth petition signers supported these complaints by sending letters to the BBC and requesting that the BBC show this evidence to the public. As a continuation of this process with BBC, documentary filmmaker Tony O'Rourke has decided to take a personal stand on this issue. People in the United Kingdom are required to pay an annual TV licence fee, which is used to fund BBC's operations, and Tony has refused to pay his TV licence fee on the basis of specific anti-terrorism legislation. Now, the article here continues, but this is an important development. I don't have great faith that it will lead to great outcomes. In fact, I think looking at the dates here, I think it may have already taken place. And I'm just going to actually have a quick look at the main site here, because I think that was an older article. And unfortunately, I've now lost the original link to it. That was actually dated from the 25th of February. And I will place a link to it on our website and you can check it for yourself. Oh, here we go. I've actually now got an update on the court case. Okay, an update on the court case regarding BBC's coverage. The court date was Monday, February 25, 2013. And it says here, the article here by Mark Graham on 911 Blogger, it says, "It was a huge victory for the 9/11 Truth community because a court finally had to face the facts and couldn't do it. Rather than having a three-hour hearing full of evidence, including testimony by Professor Niels Harrit, the judge took the easy way out, as described in the letter. Everybody who was involved in this event or supported it deserves thanks." And it says it took the easy way out, as described in the letter, but it doesn't actually tell us what that was. Unfortunately, it was not very well written. And I will have to probe into this in more depths to find out what, in fact, transpired on that day. But from what I'm reading here, it looks like the outcome was seen as positive by the 9/11 activists involved. Now, I'm going to just move on with a couple more stories here. I have an article from freespeechaustralia.com. "Take action to save our right to free speech. Freedom of speech is under attack by the Gillard-Roxon-Conroy Troika. Proposed changes to the Anti-Discrimination Act will destroy religious liberties, persecute the innocent, and make a mockery of free thought. But that is just the start of it. The Gillard government has just announced the creation of a new media censorship and licensing scheme, the start of a government-sanctioned journalism program." Well, that's quite shocking, isn't it? Of course, that will be couched in the terms of it being, we're going to make sure that the journalists do the right thing and aren't naughty. You know, that's the way the nanny state always frames these things. And I'm just reading to you from another article describing this. The Gillard government has announced its response to the Finkelstein report. Ah, and indeed, this is something we covered on the show, the Finkelstein report into media. Now, it has been described here as an unprecedented and historic attack on freedom of speech. It calls for the creation of a new media censorship and licensing scheme and the start of government-sanctioned journalism. Outside of wartime, no Australian government has ever come close to considering restrictions of this magnitude. Together with upcoming changes to our anti-discrimination laws, if passed, they represent an end to freedom of speech as we know it. There are three main parts to this proposal. Each of them is bad on its own, but together they spell disaster. First, it sets up a licensing scheme granting basic journalistic rights and protections only to those who sign up for a regulated press standards body. Second, these bodies will be overseen by a powerful taxpayer-funded super regulator, the Orwellian Public Interest Media Advocate. And third, a new public interest test will be applied for media ownership, and it's pretty clear. Public interest means political interest tests and will be used by the government to punish outlets they don't like. Well, I will put that link to this article up on our site. It's quite an interesting and important development that we need to pay attention to. Now, of course, North Korea has threatened to attack the West. And that's, of course, all over the internet. North Korea declares a 1953 war truce nullified. I don't know what to make of that. I suggest that that could be a bit of a bluff. But again, we could be moving towards a new phase of military confrontation. We'll see what happens. Now, in future shows, I'm planning to get some great guests on. I've got Malcolm Roberts coming back on soon to continue with his investigation into the CSIRO. I've got another interview scheduled on the subject of smart meters in Australia, which is going to be extremely important as new scientific research has come out showing the dangers of this technology. So that about wraps it up for this week. It's been great talking to you, and I do hope you check us out on truthnews.com.au and on Facebook. We'll be back next week. See you then.